I'm going to suggest that you would like to continue to enjoy your lunch. At the outset, I'm going to take the opportunity right now, because it's a very short window and it's a very important opportunity, to thank Renee, because Renee put this whole lunch together. Last night she was here, this morning she was here, through the snow and everything else. So really, kol hakavod lach, thank you very much for all of your work, for this beautiful lunch. And I want to thank you all for coming, and especially a special thanks to our sponsors who really enabled us to have the opportunity to bring Rabbi Sobolovsky here. Our sponsors for this scholar-in-residence Kol Yom Rishon program is the Ravinsky family, in memory of Jerry Epstein Soldinger and Paul Epstein, parents of Selina Ravinsky, and a schus for a continued refuah shlema to Michal's father, Irvin Ravinsky, Aaron Yehudit ben Chaya Adol, and the two of you should continue to be mezakas harabim for many years to come. Friends, if you were at the earlier shir with Sobolovsky, you know that it's just inspiration to listen to him. The clarity, the breadth, the depth, the erudition, and the presentation, it all comes together in a full package. It's really a schus for us to have one of the leading Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva University here. And I just want to add one piece of information that I neglected to say downstairs, and that is also to thank Yeshiva University, because when we first embarked on this idea, we've been doing scholars in residence for a number of years, but the idea of partnering with the YU Beis Medrash in a Kol Yom Rishon program, which is essentially a program that YU runs on a regular basis, and bring that program to us in whatever format we can. We obviously had to modify it because of Southwest and their limitations, but all right, that comes from being in the Midwest. But really, the idea came out of a conversation and a partnership with the Center of the Jewish Future at Yeshiva University to help inspire communities around the country with the Torah and the leadership and the erudition and scholarship of Yeshiva University's Beis Medrash, and we are zocha to have that opportunity here today. So with no further ado, I will invite Rabbi Sobolovsky to continue his presentation on the topic of Chinuch.
About 20 years ago, I was invited to give a guest shiur, and they asked me to give something that I think is, you know, contemporary, something that speaks to the olam, speaks to the audience. The problem was I had absolutely no idea who the audience was, so I guess I, you know, thought a little bit in my own little box, and I was a young married at the time, and I was trying to think of topics that interested me. So I said, okay. So they said, how about we'll talk about issues of labor and delivery on Shabbos? So they said, nah, that's not going to go over well with that crowd. I said, okay. What about care of infants on Shabbos? They said, no. So I said, I was getting a little bit frustrated. I said, what's the problem with my topics? They said, the average age is between 80 and 90 in this particular shul. I said, okay, great. We're going to talk about chinuch for parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents. They loved it. They ate it up. So that's what we're going to talk about now. So we're going to talk about chinuch for parents and grandparents. And then great-grandparents, yes, so we'll talk to you also. I said, at first glance, you know, when I was thinking about such a topic, I thought, oh, this is like way past my horizon. Like, chinuch for parents is one thing. Chinuch for grandparents. But since the last couple of weeks that we spoke to Rabbi Shimon, originally Baruch Hashem, we were blessed with our first grandchild. So, thank you very much. So we'll make it real, Lamaisa. I mean, at the ripe old age of about 7 weeks, he's really a real recipient of chinuch at this point. Okay. So let's try to familiarize ourselves, just a little bit of an overview as to this most basic, almost a cornerstone of everything that we stand for, the notion of chinuch. Obviously, chinuch plays such a major role in our lives, and really the beginning of chinuch actually starts with yesterday's parasha. The Torah uses the opportunity of the Leil HaSeder, the Pesach night, V'igadta l'bincha b'yom u'leimo, to transmit the basics of our emunah, of our faith, and everything that Yiddishkeit stands for. We begin to transmit to our children at a very, very young age, and again, revolving around the Seder. Of course, it doesn't stop at the Seder. It continues through the parashas of Kriya Shema, V'shinantam levanecha, V'dibartabam. We speak about how we are obligated to teach our children, to transmit the Torah ideas to our children. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us, almost in a startling statement, that the institution of chinuch is midrabbanan, is rabbinic in nature, not really biblical in nature, which is a very, very strange statement, because here we just mentioned that the Torah tells us time and time again how important it is to teach our children Torah. So the answer to that riddle is that there are really two different aspects of chinuch. There is the informational side of chinuch, in terms of teaching our children what Torah is about, learning Chumash with our children, learning Mishnayos, teaching them Gemara, teaching them the very beginnings of Aleph Beis, that for sure is Min HaTorah. There is no question that that is a biblical commandment. That is what we say time and time again, Mishinamtam Levanecha, Maratam Asamas Benecha. There is no question that that is what the Torah had in mind, to teach our children Torah. However, Chinuch Midirabbanan means that in the world of the Torah, so the Torah does not require of us to actually train our children to literally go through the steps of mitzvah observance. I could teach my child about shofar, but they don't have to bother coming in. They can run outside in the middle of Tekiah Shofar. They don't have to actually hear the shofar in the Torah because they're not technically bar mitzvah. Or I have to teach my children about wearing tzitzis, but they don't have to actually wear the tzitzis yet. I have to teach my children about davening, but they don't have to actually daven yet. It means min haTorah, I have to teach them the lessons that they're going to use when they get older, but to go through the day-to-day literal observance of commandments, that is an obligation that the Chachamim, that our sages placed upon, primarily upon parents. We'll see as we go on, to a certain extent that the entire Jewish community, but primarily upon parents, to not only suffice ourselves with just merely telling them about mitzvahs, but to literally go through the mitzvah observance with them. This idea is so critical that it is not only do we give information to our children, but we literally train them that even though it's not actually mandated by the Torah, it is mentioned in the Torah. The Meshech Chochma has a comment in Parshas Vayera that Avram Avinu is praised by Hashem, Lamana Sheyitzave as Banav as Beis Acharav. The reason why Avram Avinu is held in such a high regard by Hashem is because, first and foremost, he will train his children, he will teach his members of his household Lashmor Derech Hashem, to fulfill the way and the path, to walk in the path of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only in terms of Ben Adam Lamakom, in terms of our relationship to God, but in terms of Ben Adam Lachavero, Lasos Tzedakho Mishpat. We train our children to be good people, to be honest people, to be just, kind people. This is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always seeks from every Jew, every descendant of Avraham Avinu, to not only teach children Torah, but to actually guide them and literally get them into ready for Torah observance. So yes, there is a chinuch min haTorah of teaching. Yes, there is a chinuch min derabbanan of practicing. And it's all subsumed under the category of l'shmor derech Hashem. So it is critical for us as parents, grandparents, educators, teachers, rabbanim, any member of the Jewish people, that this is something which is, of course, of utmost importance, how and what messages we send to our children. So let's try to understand a little bit in terms of halacha, what this is all about. There is almost a lomdush, almost like an analytical, a theoretical question, which has some very real practical differences, as to who exactly is obligated in chinuch. Who is this obligation rest upon? One can understand that this obligation rests primarily upon the child, even though the child is not yet bar bas mitzvah. So although on a Torah level, they don't have to yet literally observe the mitzvahs, but mid the rabbanon, on a rabbinic level, they are considered to be obligated in mitzvahs. So the child has to daven, and the child has to wear tzitzis, and the child has to keep Shabbos. It means the child themselves are what we call in halacha, a mechuyav bedavar. They are obligated in these mitzvahs, albeit on a rabbinic level. And there are others who say, no, that is not correct. That the child, him or herself, is not really required to perform mitzvahs. If the child could sneak out of shul, so that's not off the record, so hopefully my kids are not listening to this one, so then there's nothing wrong with that from the vantage point of the child. Chinuch is a parent obligation. Chinuch is something that the parent is obligated to make sure to do, but from the child's vantage point, the child is not technically obligated. Why should this make a practical difference? So one important difference may be as follows. There is a halacha that in order for one person to be motzi somebody else, for me to enable somebody else to perform their obligation, for example, for me to read the Megillah on somebody else's behalf, for me to blow the shofar on somebody else's behalf, for me to recite a bracha on somebody else's behalf, I have to be what's called the mechuyav bedavar. I have to be obligated in that mitzvah. If I am exempt from a particular mitzvah, I cannot help you fulfill your obligation. So as a general rule, a katan, somebody under the age of bar mitzvah, would not be able to enable somebody else to fulfill their obligation. What if that child is already what we call higia l'chinuch? They have reached the age, they're 11, 12 years old, they've already reached the age of chinuch, they are doing mitzvos midrabanan. Could they be able to fulfill the mitzvah on behalf of somebody else? So in a very practical sense, could the child, the 12-year-old boy, halavai, he should know this, but he knows the Megillah already. He already knows the Megillah. Could he be the Bal Korei for the Megillah? Or perhaps an even more practical question, can he or she light the Hanukkah candles on behalf of the grown-ups, on behalf of the adults? I've had the Shaila presented many, many times. Sometimes parents is away, a town, questions, who exactly is going to light the candles? So maybe the child who's 12 years old, boy, make 11 years old, boy or girl, can they light the Hanukkah candles on behalf of everybody else? So the post can point out, well, it depends on what your take on chinuch is. If you think that the child is really obligated, so then maybe the answer would be yes. If you think that the child is not technically obligated, but rather it's a parental obligation, so the answer would probably be no. So again, this is a very real question that does come up, and again, touches on the basic issue, the basic lumdus, the basic analytical question as to what chinuch is all about. Is chinuch child-oriented or is chinuch parent-oriented? When we speak about chinuch, so we speak about chinuch both for positive mitzvot as well as for prohibitions. So we have to train our children to tzitzis, tefillah, etc., and we have to train our children not to eat not kosher and not to mechallel Shabbos, etc. However, there are differences in terms of ages as to when this chinuch begins. Chinuch for losa, say, for prohibition, starts at a very, very young age. Basically when, I'm going to say something that I'm probably going to get a lot of chuckles from, when the child understands the meaning of the magic word no. Some children have yet, some adults have not yet learned the meaning of the word no. But if and when the child does understand what the word no means, so then, at that point, then they should be already be instructed, no, one is not allowed to turn on the lights on Shabbos, and no, one is not allowed to eat the not kosher, and no, one is not allowed to speak Lashon Hara, no, one is not allowed to tell something that's not true. Chinuch again, both in Benam Lamachom, as well as Benam Lechavero. So once they reach that very, very young age of knowing what the concept of no means, they should already begun to be instructed as to how that plays out practically in their lives. When it comes to mitzvah saseh, when it comes to positive mitzvahs, so here the Gemara tells us that you have to wait until a little bit of a later age until they really begin to understand how to perform the mechanics of that mitzvah properly. So as an example, the Gemara tells us that the mitzvah of lulav, it really doesn't make much sense to hand the lulav to a two-year-old. You want to give him a little stuffed lulav, that's one thing. You want to give him a lulav and have him walk around with a lulav in shul, it doesn't really mean much. They have to reach the age where they know what to do with the lulav. So they know, you shake a lulav. You don't bang your younger brother's head with the lulav. You have to know what you're doing with the lulav. Or the Gemara tells us that a child who's 2 years old doesn't even know how to get dressed himself. It would be silly for him to wear tzitzis. Once they reach the age of knowing how to get dressed, once they reach the age of knowing how to shake a lulav, they reach the age of knowing how to sit in the sukkah, they understand a little bit as to how to perform these mitzvahs, then chinuch becomes apropos. However, even though we're speaking about a certain age in terms of chinuch, in terms of prohibitions, begins a little bit at an earlier age, this is referring to not a scenario where I'm actually causing the child to do an aveira. If I actively cause the child to do an aveira, that's an entirely different picture. So let's say, for example, I want to give a child non-kosher food. So that's out of the question. Again, putting aside health reasons, pikuach nefesh reasons, talking about I want to feed non-kosher food to a child, and I take the attitude, well, what's the big deal? They're lo higil chinuch. They don't understand it. They're not even going to realize that's not kosher. What's the difference? So the answer is that is prohibited actually min haTorah. One is not permitted to actively cause a child to do an aveira. If the child is doing the aveira on their own, if the child's very, very young, and they don't really understand what's going on, so then I don't have to stop them. But for me to actively cause them to do the aveira, that is clearly out of the question, even at a very, very young age, literally at a young age, to such a young age that according to many poskim, this applies, it may sound strange for a moment, I'll explain myself, it may even apply before the child is actually even born. Even in utero, there may be a prohibition to cause a child to do an aveira. What possible aveira? Everyone's trying to scratch their heads. What in the world is the rabbi talking about? What great act of chil Shabbos is going to happen before this baby's born? I'll tell you a very real shaila. I've had the shaila numerous times. Following shaila, already discussed back in the days of the Rishonim. One of the prohibitions that you're not allowed to cause a child to do is a kohen. If you have a little male, little boy kohen, you are not allowed to take him to the cemetery. So one would have thought, oh, come on, he's so little, he's only 6 months old. What's the difference? He's never going to remember anyway. No, that is prohibited actually, min ha-Torah, to take a little baby boy Kohen into the cemetery. What is the halacha in the following scenario? A pregnant wife of a Kohen wants to go to the cemetery. What is the din? Is that considered to be the equivalent of causing that baby, that fetus, to potentially become tamei tumas beis? So that's a very real question. The Rishonim discussed this, and one of the reasons that it's permissible is, it's what we call a sveik sveika, it's a double doubt. We're not sure that it's a boy, we're not sure that it's a girl. And even if it's a boy, you know, sometimes we're not sure, is it really going to be a viable birth? So in the poskim in Shulchan Aruch, so the poskim are makel are lenient, that it, what's called an ashes kohen muberes, that a pregnant wife of a kohen is permitted to go to a funeral, permitted to go to a cemetery, because of this reason, this leniency of a double doubt. So some of you may be wondering, wait a second, that may change radically bizman hazeh. It's very easy to resolve that first doubt. It's called a simple sonogram. Now, whether or not the insurance company will cover that sonogram to find out, that I can't tell you. But very often people know anyway. I've gotten to Shiloh numerous times. What is the din? If a person wants to know, a wife of a Cohen who is pregnant, and she wants to go to a cemetery, wants to go to a funeral, what is the halacha? Is she permitted to do so or not? So my response is always as follows. If you know that you're carrying a boy, it's a big machlok. It's a big question whether you're allowed to. If you don't know that you're carrying a boy, if you're able to get a sonogram quickly and efficiently, you should try to get one. But if it's not always that practical to do that, so then we could probably rely on what we call the sveik sveika, and we would be a little bit more lenient about that. But again, it just highlights the fact that we take chinuch with the utmost seriousness. Even something that happens before the baby's born could potentially impact. One never knows what the ramifications are, even at a later point in life. So again, so we're dealing with, on the one hand, actively causing a child to do an aveira, that's absolutely out of the question under all circumstances. An important corollary of this is, in the realm of Shabbos, many people are not aware of this, many people have a certain attitude that, well, the child is so little anyway, it's only a baby anyway, you know, he's never going to remember anyway, that I asked him to turn on the light on Shabbos. So that is a no-no. That is, I don't want to be very graphic, but that is a violation of the Aseret HaDibros, because that's exactly what it says in the Ten Commandments. Lo sasika malacha ata uvincha uvitecha. Your son and your daughter that the Chumash is referring to is not bar bas mitzvah. That's ata. That's the Torah speaking to you. They're grown-ups like you are. Vincha uvitecha means the little children, so one should not get into that rut of asking the children to do things for you on Shabbos. I see a lot of sighs. Maybe we should stop when we're ahead. What if I see my child, or I see somebody else's child, doing something that is an aveira, but I didn't initiate it? So again, we said that if the child is higil l'chinuch, the child has reached the age of chinuch, so that would be problematic. Then I would for sure have to stop my child. Whether or not I have to stop somebody else's child touches on a much more global question. As we start off the shiur by saying, who exactly does chinuch speak to? Does chinuch speak to parents? Does chinuch speak to educators? Chinuch speak to the entire community? So it's not 100% clear what the answer to that question is. If I see somebody else's child doing something wrong, but if I see my own child doing something wrong, if the child is a gil chinuch, so then yes, I would definitely have to intercede. Before the age of chinuch, if the child is doing it on their own, that would be technically permissible. The Gemara has a fascinating story about that one time it happened that the keys to the Beis Medrash were by mistake left in the middle of the street. And it was an area where there was no Eruv, and they couldn't open up the Beis Medrash. So to actively tell the children to carry the keys was out of the question. But what we can do is, we can bring the children there, little kids there, and have them play around a little bit. And we know kids like keys. And not literally tell them to do it, but place them in a place without encouraging them, literally. So then technically speaking, that may be okay. The Gemara has a whole discussion about that. So it's a very humorous end of that story. It's humorous, not in the Gemara itself, but it's humorous in one of the applications of that story. So I'll try to share that humor with you. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim suggested, let's bring the little Talia Vitaliasos to the street. Talia means little boys in Aramaic, and Talia means little girls in Aramaic. So let's bring the little boys and the little girls, and they'll play in the street, and hopefully one of them will pick up the keys, and hopefully they'll walk to the right place. A lot of wishful thinking, and eventually we'll get the doors open. So there was a question that was posed to one of the Hasidic Rebbeim. They asked him, I don't understand the Gemara. How could the Gemara advocate bringing the little boys and little girls? But this is a co-ed playgroup that the Gemara is advocating, bring the little boys and little girls. So this Rebbe apparently was very sharp on the spot, responded, no, you didn't understand the Gemara. The goal was to find the keys. They said, if you're going to bring a bunch of little boys, they're going to fight and play and play. But no one's going to bother looking down to see the keys. But if you bring little boys in, and then you bring the little girls in, oh, so they're not going to look at the little girls, so they're going to look down, so they'll see the keys, and then they'll open up. Whether that's shot or not, the Gemara, you can choose for yourself. There is a fascinating insight, which I guess we'll close with, and perhaps put everything into perspective, both in terms of some of the shiurim we've been talking about a little bit before, a little bit now. And that is a question that is posed by Rabbi Chonon Wasserman. He raises a question. We mentioned when we spoke about chinuch, we said that there are some who argue that a child is obligated in chinuch. It's not so much the parent's obligation, but it's actually, in a sense, incumbent upon the child. Rabbi Chonon poses a challenge. How can there be an obligation on a child? How can the Chachamim tell us that the child is obligated? After all, the whole reason why we have to follow Dinim D'Rabbanim, we spent so much of the earlier Shia talking about Dinim D'Rabbanim, rabbinic in nature, why do we have to follow Dinim D'Rabbanim? The answer is, because the Torah says so. Because the Torah says, Lo sasim in adava she'agidu chayim in asmo. We are obligated to listen when the Chachamim command us not to move muktzah, and the Chachamim tell us to wash the tilas yadayim, the Chachamim tell us to light Chanukah candles and Shabbos candles. So those are all dinim midderabanan, but the Torah itself requires of us to listen to the Chachamim. So Rabbi Chonon says, we're almost caught a little bit in a circle, because the whole reason why we have to listen to the Chachamim is because the Torah tells us. But the child under the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah doesn't have to, in a sense, listen to the Torah, because they're not yet Bar Mitzvah. So why do they have to listen to the Rabbanim? So when the rabbi says, child, under the age of a mitzvah, you have to come to shul to hear shofar, if the child was a real chacham and a real mechutzah, so he would respond back and say, excuse me, rabbi, I don't have to listen to you, because your entire authority comes from the Torah, and I don't have to listen to the Torah. So Rabbi Chonon says he's right. Don't encourage our children or our grandchildren to come up with that response, but he's right. So what's the answer to that dilemma? So Rabbi Chonon has a fascinating principle. Rabbi Chonon says that, almost like a brisket Torah, there are two different ways that we have to listen to Hashem. We have to listen to what Hashem commands us, and we have to listen to what Hashem wants of us. And if we know that Hashem wants something of us, even if He didn't literally command it, it's incumbent upon us to do it anyway. Each and every person, Jew, non-Jew, male, female, grown up and child, says Rabbi Chonon, it's part of the contract of entering into this world. Hashem created us on one condition, that we do what His ratzon is, what His will is. Sometimes He told us exactly what His will is, and that's the mitzvah satorah. And sometimes it was a little bit less clear, and that's where the Chachamim come in, and the Chacham explained to us that the ratzon of Hashem is that we should light our Chanukah candles, and the ratzon of Hashem is we shouldn't move our muktzah, and the ratzon of Hashem is that the 11-year-olds should come into shul for tkiyah shofar. So yes, it's true, there may not be a tzivui of Hashem, but there is very much a ratzon of Hashem. Just to conclude, a fascinating story, Rabbi Chonon Wasserman in this piece, so he develops a whole idea about that's what happened at the very, very beginning of Matan Torah. That at Matan Torah, the Gemara tells us that the Torah was actually really supposed to be given on the 6th day of Sivan, and that it was delayed to be given on the 7th day of Sivan, and a whole discussion as to how that happened exactly. If Hashem said one way and Moshe changed it, what was going on? So Rabbi Chonon develops a beautiful principle that there was a tzivoy, that Hashem said, we really could have Shavuos today if we have to, but Moshe Rabbeinu understood that Hashem really wanted the Jews to have the extra day. They needed a little bit more preparation, a little bit more going, a little bit more, and Moshe Rabbeinu did what the Ratzon of Hashem was, and that's what the Gemara says, that Hashem agreed, and that's why ultimately His presence appeared in Har Sinai. The Ratzon appeared on Har Sinai on the 7th day of Sivan. So that significance of the Ratzon HaTorah plays out in terms of Achinuch, how important it is to instill in our children not just what the intricacies, the details are, but really what the general picture is. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants of us, what the Derech Hashem is, both in terms of our relationship with Him as well as our relationship with our fellow man. The Ratzon HaTorah is so important. So this particular last piece from Rabbi Chonon, it actually appears in print. And I actually saw it not only in print, but I actually had the zchus, I had the merit to hear it directly from Rabbi Chonon's son. Rabbi Chanan had a son, Rabbi Simcha Wasserman. One of many of Rabbi Chanan's children were killed in the Holocaust, but one of them survived was Rabbi Simcha Wasserman. And Rabbi Simcha Wasserman actually came to Riverdale where I grew up. This goes back about 30 years ago or so. And it was right before Shavuos, and he spoke. And he said this over from his father. And he said that he remembers as a little boy in the streets of Baranovich, the town Rabbi Chanan was the Rosh Yeshiva, he remembers walking with his father in the street. And his father told him this before Shavuos, the Shtikl Torah that eventually later was printed up. He said, if that's not Chinuch, then what is Chinuch? That's the image of Chinuch here. Rav Simcha was an older man already, a well-established Rosh Yeshiva. And I saw in his eyes, he was telling over a story that had happened 70, 80 years earlier, that he had transmitted pel-peh from his father. So I feel to be able to be part of that chain, to be able to take that from to the next generation, to transmit that. I always tell that story over to my Tamidim. I said that when we speak about chinuch, chinuch is the connecting of generations. Chinuch is the chain. So I give everybody a bracha that all the parents and all the grandparents and the great-grandparents, everyone should continue to be mechanech, and the mechanchem in the community who are given that baruch Hashem, that beautiful, wonderful opportunity to be mechanech in a more formal sense. So Kadosh Baruch Hu should give us all of Klai Sosiyat Nishmaya to be mechanech our children and grandchildren properly, to be able to see nachas and to be able to see the next generation following all the way back to Avinu v'shamru derech Hashem l'asot tzedakah u'mishpat.
So we have a few minutes. Anybody had any sort of questions that they wanted to ask? An opportunity now to. No? All right. Then, on behalf of the entire Gila, again, I want to thank Rabbi Sobolewski for coming and for sharing and for spending the day with us. And really, it's been an aroskus and
thank you. Thank you. Thank you.